The hand signal means we're recording. Hey guys, welcome. We did it, another one. Killing it. New episode of the Walking Alone podcast. I'm still Diego. Cornell is here, Danny's here, and one of my favorite comedians is here, Mr. Ben Kronberg. How are you, sir?
Oh, hi, I'm good.
Good. Thank you so much for coming by my Bushwick apartment.
Yeah, no problem. You little lit a candle.
I did.
Like either you just went poop or were about to fuck.
Both.
Okay.
I have a lot of sweaty things in here. I just want to make sure it wasn't too annoying for you guys to be in my room.
Oh, no.
I got a little dog. You know, he smells.
Yeah. I like little dogs.
Yeah, he's a good dude. How are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing good.
Yeah?
I just, woke up. Tried to get rid of a boner, showered.
It's like a dead body. I try to get rid of it.
Do you walk it off or jack it off?
I try to just roll around until it's gone.
You beat into submission. It's like, all right, I'm done here.
I do like to leave the house with a boner though, because it kind of makes me like, oh yeah, I am a man.
Yeah. You're ready to take on the day.
Yeah.
It's like raising your flag.
Yeah.
It's a good way to start the aura of around, like, if someone just knows, they could just sense it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they should be careful or they're going to get penetrated.
Mm-hmm.
I just forgot you got tattooed. That looks awesome.
Oh, thanks, dude.
Yeah, it's great.
It's still healing. It's in the healing process. It was starting to itch a little bit the other day.
Don't scratch it.
I won't.
Mr.
I love
Big
tattoos
Steve.
On dark skin.
Oh,
I think they kind of look, I mean, you're nuts. But, I really, if you're going to compliment a black guy, you got to...
Yeah, absolutely. You got to go first, him, then me.
Everyone,
if you didn't know Cornell was black, it's an audio show.
Yeah.
Now we're losing listeners by the thousands.
Or gaining,
good point. Yeah. Ben, I guess we'll start off with, where are you from?
Originally from Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of where I was birthed and raised. I lived there I lived in Colorado for 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Which kind of, now I'm 38, just turned 38. And so it's just a mind fuck of like, oh,
Yeah.
I wish I would have got out sooner.
Uh-huh.
Moved and experienced the world, but everything in due time, I suppose.
Yeah. It's not the same for everyone.
Yeah.
And you went straight here?
No, I went to LA for a couple years. I liked it all right. It was just sort of like where I was kind of pushed to go once I got into comedy and started doing like festivals and got a manager. They were like, well, it'll be best if you're out here. So I had some family out there. So it kind of seemed safer, early on move. But then, I was living there for a couple of years. Some things were happening, but it was still very like a self-conscious, it's a very self-conscious, ego-driven zone in Los Angeles, which it sort of has to be, and you kind of have to be like willing to engage in that to participate in it, and that's one of the things of it. And then I just randomly visited a friend in New York, not randomly, but I was starting to travel and doing a lot of colleges, and just visited my buddy who I'd known since sixth grade, and he'd been living here for a couple of years, and I was just in between places in LA, and I was like, I should just move here
because
I didn't have anything specifically keeping me in LA, and New York is a great its own land of opportunity and hustle and inspiration and stuff.
Was comedy like a thing like since you were a kid, or was it just something before that that kind of brought you into comedy?
Well, I guess the causality of it all is like, I always liked comedy growing up, and like Naked Gun movies and Airplane and I'm Gonna Get You Sucka and all those things. And so I always think I identified with comedy and humor, and my family was a very farty, open family. There was really no restrictions on what we could say or what we shouldn't say. Like, it's interesting, like I found most of the censorship happening in my life after I got into comedy.
Ironically,
and it's this sort of thing. And but also like, because I can say anything in front of my mom and do like any joke in front of my mom, basically it's sort of that weird barometer of like, when I'm told I can't say something on stage, or hey, maybe don't talk about this stuff, or or this is a clean show, or blah, blah, blah. It just sort of makes me laugh because it's like, if, you know, my fucking mom can take it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why are you guys being collective pussies about words?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and all this fucked up shit can happen in the world, and war and people and mm-hmm. the celebration of violence, which is interesting and fun in its own right. But in comparison and juxtaposed to ideas, it's really interesting the power that words have. And I think, you know, music got me into comedy. Ultimately, I played guitar out of college, just started playing guitar out of college. And then the songs that I would come up with were tended to be sillier songs and stupid songs mm-hmm. as opposed to serious. And then somebody at an open mic that I was at, they're like, hey, you should try that at the comedy club. And then it just sort of like, you know, snowballed and slowly revealed itself as being an opportunity and an option of doing something. And then I went to film school and all these things, and I had all these ideas about what I was going to do. But then once I discovered performing, I think I discovered performing before I discovered comedy. You know, mm-hmm. it was like music, performing,
oh,
you know,
weird, yeah.
Comedy, and then, you know, and then all the politics of comedy, I think, either bring you and draw you into it more or push you away from it, like a contest that you might blah, 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 or a scene that you're in that would either, you know, elevate you or you know, reject you.
Yeah.
But luckily I had enough like support system around me that it was like, kept being kind of encouraged. And then I just started doing it. And I was doing comedy in Denver for about 5 years before I moved.
Oh, cool.
To LA.
Mm-hmm.
But it was sort of like at the 5-year mark that things started, you know, happening more than just open mics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of opportunities started presenting themselves. I've heard that a few times where like, more like established comics will say like, get good at your hometown, then move to New York, then move to LA. So at least, because if you get good in a place, sorry, like a comedy haven, and people remember you as the open mic person,
yeah,
they'll see that person first before they see, you know, your chops have become better. You know, it's just difficult in that way.
Yeah, you're always seen in that initial context, I suppose. But like, that kind of happened with me for Denver, as in like, even though I won the local contest there and got, you know, opportunities and worked my way up through the club. Once I moved away, I sort of, my, you know, at least in the comedy club there, my opportunities sort of plateaued.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the guys who I started with, who are still there, their opportunities, you know, at that club kind of kept increasing, and they get a, like, you know, headline, you know, yeah, occasionally Wednesday, Sunday nights, and they're, you know, like the go-to guys. Whenever I go back there, it's kind of difficult to even get a guest set sometimes at the comedy club. So that's forced me to just sort of really tap in. And luckily there's like a really good independent scene there with a bunch of shows and other theaters that also do comedy. So that kind of gave me the, you know, I'm not just like, well, I can't go to Denver cause they don't let me perform that much. Yeah. There's like plenty of venues, and I actually probably make out better that way because I'm able to, you know, kind of stay, remain in that indie context and the DIY sort of thing, and, you know, and have, you know, experienced a good amount of gigs from that. And especially now that weed is legal there,
mm-hmm.
it's like, there's all these different shows. Like last year I went back for 420 weekend cause it was like a really big thing there.
Yeah.
All these businesses and dispensaries and stuff. And so I got some just really cool gigs just because now there's weed legal there. You know,
makes a lot of sense.
Which is pretty dope.
Yeah, it's cool, and it's legal in DC now too.
Oh, yeah, it just happened. Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's crazy.
It's weird.
It is, isn't it? Wait, is it DC or Maryland?
I think it was. Oh, well, DC is in Maryland. I don't know if it's just DC.
Yeah.
I assume if it's DC, it's Maryland.
I think it's DC.
Like just DC?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, you want to be the fact checker on that one?
Can we go?
No, just tell me what you think.
Yeah.
You're the fact. DC. Danny says DC, guys.
All right, okay,
cool.
You heard it here first.
Are you guys from DC or something?
Yeah, I'm from Richmond.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, Richmond's great.
Yeah,
and cool. A lot of cool dudes from Richmond.
Oh yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's a fun place to visit. But I'm glad I don't live there anymore. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of like the same thing that you're saying. Because I have a lot of friends who are musicians from Richmond, and they always say that. Like there's like, you know, of course there are like two tiers. If you're like a touring band who can like sell out like, you know, small like 400 or 500 person clubs, there's like that tier. But then if you're like super famous and you're from Richmond and you go to Richmond, of course people are gonna see you if you're on MTV. But if you're kind of like at that like load medium tier, you'll be huge everywhere else, but then you'll come to play like a local show and like your friends will come.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like, you know, people aren't freaking out the way they'll freak out about you in, like, you know, I don't know, Nebraska.
Or yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's strange like that. But,
yeah.
But it's a cool place. I like it.
It's good people.
Yeah. I watched that Modern Comedian thing about you.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that show, first of all. It's a really cool show. You did the music for that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until like five episodes in.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted him to make my name bigger. And
it was, yeah, it's pretty small. I had to really pay attention. Like, oh,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
It. One of my favorite things about that was when you were talking about when you did Kimmel and you're saying how you had a manager at the time and they didn't want you to use your notebook because you kind of are famous for using your notebook on stage and it's you have your jokes there. It's kind of an interesting way of kind of presenting yourself.
Yeah.
And how saying how you're upset, not upset, but like you're bummed that you didn't do it, that you didn't listen to your own voice of what you would want your art to be in that way. And it's like, now do you think that the part of that getting better as a comedian, a part of it is finding like really understanding what your voice is and like what you want to be presented as?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like whatever you know, you're supposed to make choices, and I think in finding your voice, it's sort of like a series of choices that you make or test out. Like you try this or you try that or you know, try these types of jokes or whatever. And it was just sort of more of a formal aspect, right? Like, am I going to take the microphone out of the mic stand and walk around with it, or am I just going to keep it there? I was tending to just really keep the mic in the mic stand. And so it also, you know, kind of gave me something to do, with, you know, moments that were, you know, maybe trying to think of a joke legitimately. If you're flipping through a book, sometimes it's like a little bit strangely more justified because you're actually doing something. But then I learned that itself could be a thing and a way for people to kind of like engage sort of like, I wonder what's in the book. So I always have people come up to me and ask me like, oh, is there anything in there? Are you really using that?
Oh, they assume it's just blank pages?
So I think even that, people not knowing kind of helped people like, you know, consider what I was doing, but also remember me like, oh, who's the guy with the notebook? Whereas, you know, I mean, you don't really ask that in an open mic because everybody's the guy with the notebook.
Yeah.
But it's also that thing or that fuck you or that sort of maybe meta-ish thing of taking an open mic sort of style or approach and putting it in this other context of like an official show.
Yeah.
People criticize, you know, would criticize it for like, you know, well, it's not very professional. And then just the whole idea that, I mean, you know, comedy as a profession is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and sort of this thing of like, well, does it really matter? And then once I started doing TV sets and things like that, they have teleprompters where you submit all your jokes and you're able to see all your jokes anyways, you know, for the half hour or for the, you know, whatever. I mean, every joke that a late night talk show host is telling, he's reading.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of the truth that is, you know, it's one of the elephants in the room that's not talked about or whatever, but it's the reality of it. And so I don't always use it but I still do, but it's always different. Like, I'm not as like hardcore, like this is what I have to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm doing other things and just exploring, because it's like, if you're going to be doing something for a long time, you know, you want to switch it up. You don't always want to do it the same way. And that's kind of what I think has helped me just stay in comedy, is just sort of being able to shift and adapt. And sometimes you have to, you know, suck the dick that's giving you money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, suck the dick like it wants to be sucked. Don't like
told you, Dan.
Don't take it into your own hands. Just here, I'll show you.
All right, guys, let's take a break.
Look at me. Yeah. Look at me.
But I think that that notebook thing is so super important. Like, man, I mean, I know you guys are comics and I'm not a comic, but
I'm doing comedy. I'm not a comic.
But I had never, I don't do comedy, but I just like have a lot of weird ideas. And this guy, pointing to Diego, he like kind of inspired me to just keep a notebook.
Write stuff down.
Yeah. I've been writing shit down. It's crazy. And I thought about that bit you had about the, like, why is butt sex cool, but you can't jerk someone off with like a pile of shit in your hand?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was like, man, if you're just walking around, like, I'm sure you guys just walk around and observe shit that's funny every day. But yeah, when you like write it down, I think, and then you can like actually put it out, I think that.
Yeah, realize
it's
it. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it makes it a thing.
Well, everybody has thoughts. Like, everybody's thinking thoughts. Just, you know, few of us are conditioned to record them, or we're conditioned to record the sort of mundane thoughts, or like, oh, like chores and stuff. Like, it's like most people are just writing down like what they have to buy, get at the store later, or what they have to do, or who they're meeting with. But
yeah,
we have so many more kind of important, fun thoughts that happen, and
yeah,
everybody thinks stuff. And I think when you're around a comedian or people are around you, like, it's, then they get accustomed to like, oh, you should write that down. Like, I have a number of friends that are like, oh, you should write that down, like, if something is said or blah blah blah. So it's sort of like a collective process too. Yeah, you know,
I can't remember what comedian I saw a few years ago where he was saying that the only difference between a comedian and a normal person is everyone has the thoughts go through their head, but a comedian will kind of just grab it and keep fucking with it and like, mm-hmm, keep turning it upside down and figuring out what way makes the most sense. And yeah, that's all. Yeah, for, I mean, I've only been doing this like 2 months now, and it's just like, I'll see something that kind of sticks out for some reason, and it's just like, oh, that seems weird. And how, like, how can I make this about my dick or something?
Yeah.
How can I insert my dick into this conversation?
Yeah. Or pruny fingers.
Yeah. It's the only joke I've written so far.
It's a good one, man. Thank you.
It's good. Yeah, I did the open mic over at Pete's Candy Store, and I was sitting there trying to go through like the 6 jokes I have, and then you walked in the room, and I literally, I 1 o'clock, I finished training jiu-jitsu, and then I went home and came here, where you are now, and I sat here, was eating, and I put on Modern Comedian just so, like, to watch something and get my head into the comedy, and I was watching your episode, close the laptop right over there, and you walk in the room, and I'm like, that's strange. Weird coincidence from the comedy gods.
Yeah.
And Sean Patton walks in, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah, he never goes there. It's just his girlfriend was a musician, and
yeah, she went up right before me.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
It was weird, and then like, I'm like, I just said hi to you, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be weird. I have to do my shitty jokes in front of someone I really look up to, and you're nice enough to hang out and watch, which I really appreciated.
Yeah.
But then you did one of the coolest songs I've ever heard off your phone.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the one you recorded at Guitar Center, you're saying?
Oh, that, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have this app that it's like, kind of like a 4-track, but it also has like some like sequencers and its own like drum machine sort of bullshit. But it's definitely the coolest one I found, and it's what I did like the Modern Comedian music on, and different things, and because it keeps it pretty simple. It's, I think it's one of the things of like, you know, this is really all you need for this setup, right? Like, yeah, you could definitely have a huge board with a bunch of bullshit on it that would, you know, just kind of make everything more confusing and convoluted. But I think just whatever you're doing to kind of keep it as simple as possible, and it's really easy to want to, you know, do everything, you know, it's really easy, like, oh, I'm a musician, so I should gather all the people with the stuff, and it's just like, well, people are hard to work with, and, you know, these things are actually really easy to work with, you know, they're there for us.
Yeah, it's like the...
until they take us over.
Yeah, well, the robot girlfriends and boyfriends.
Mm-hmm. I want both.
Yeah, it's gonna
I want all the experiences.
Yeah, it's gonna be, it's gonna be a thing one of these days.
Yeah.
They're like, I mean, man, why take out a loan to get a Ferrari to pick up some assholes when you can just you can take a loan out to buy
assholes?
Yes.
Physical robot assholes.
Yeah, like actual rubbery robot assholes.
They come with like you know, like if you shoot a gun, the bullet comes in, the next one comes up, and it's just gonna be assholes like that. Like, once you fuck it, it's like, all right, next one.
Yeah.
I have
the daily assholes. It's like the contact lenses. Okay. I have the monthly.
Yeah. These are the wash it out and put it back in. These are meant for more.
And you just spray it with contact solution.
Yeah.
And you just like get it clean again.
Soak it.
I lost my assholes.
You can soak it in like a minty, solution, and you get different sensations.
That's just nice.
Yeah.
I've always found sensations on my like different sensations like that not to be, they're interesting. You know, when you first like encounter it, it's interesting, but then it's just like, you know, you just want You just want wet and tight, really.
Yeah.
The fire and ice condom?
I tried that. I've tried like a lube that sort of has a something, but yeah, with no condom. It's
the
just
American way.
Raw dogging, man. Yeah. That's why we're all here.
Did you like the fire and ice, Danny?
When I used the fire and ice condom, I asked the girl, I was like, so how'd it feel? She was like, icy. She's like, how'd it feel? I was like, fiery.
It's like the color of the dress. It's like that dress color. Yeah.
No, it's black and blue.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's
funny. Did it help keep you hard? Because that's the hardest part about a condom, right?
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. Pretty much always hard.
You're always hard. You don't have a problem.
No. It's hard right now.
Oh, thank you. You've been holding my dog. Yeah.
You're holding like a knobby dildo.
That's real.
Just think about it.
Don't smell it.
Whatever you do, don't smell it. That's the first rule of
podcast.
Yeah, we're talking into a microphone that a bunch of people have talked on. Because if I ever smelled like a mic, it's like one of the most.
I've never Lysol these mics.
Well, you know. It's not bad. the dentedness of it would indicate it would smell worse, but really
they've been through a lot of hardcore shows.
It's not so bad.
Back to questions.
Cues.
Yeah, well, what were some of your like comedy like influences you look up to?
Growing up, I guess one of the first, Eddie Murphy was probably like the earliest memory of a comedian sort of standing out as just beyond a comedian. And I think that got me, you know, paying attention to it. But I would like grow up watching A&E and seeing like Dana Gould and, Seinfeld and Rita Rudner and all these people that are just sort of like collectively representing this thing that I think is sort of the important thing is like, you know, to just have an Eddie Murphy out there makes it very inaccessible. But once you see people that are like, you haven't really heard of, but they're maybe kind of famous or they're famous mm-hmm. enough to be on a TV show, you're then like, oh, this is a thing. So I think the whole scene itself is kind of worth looking up to, you know, and kind of makes it more accessible. Andrew Dice Clay, Sam Kinison, George Carlin, more recently, like Mitch Hedberg and Dimitri Martin. I think, you know, I encountered those guys before I started doing comedy. But I think they probably, you know, with like Stephen Wright or even George Carlin had like those sorts of influences on me. But I always liked the crass, the dirty sort of taboo jokes like Andrew Dice Clay would do. Like, yeah. You know, saying, you know,
Hickory Dickory Dock.
Yeah. Doing these things that, you know, saying these things that you're not supposed to say, or rather saying the things that you're supposed to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Like no one people says. Don't want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Did you have a time when you started, like, because right now your style is very, short, very much fatless jokes. Where did you ever go through like a storytelling part in your comedy, or is it you always kind of felt directed in the same way?
Yeah, I think my brain never worked in a storytelling way per se. Or I'm not like a big guy. I'm not like, oh, I got to tell you this thing that happened to me and then make it all, you know, embellish it and hyperbole and all that sort of stuff. I'm more like just sort of short thoughts or ideas or, you know, the fart.
Yeah.
Joke sort of, you know, thing. I guess I started out comedy doing songs, but those songs weren't really stories. They were just like a bunch of jokes, you know, like a song about poop. I had a song about, you know,
pedophilia,
golden showers. Yeah. Now I have the
pedophilia. I really like that
so
one.
I finally come to terms with, that.
It's hilarious.
And, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I enjoy storytellers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys that I started with are kind of like have this sort of in between, a little bit of story, a little bit of jokiness to them. And you're
on tour just now with Nick Thune, and he kind of has a really cool way where it's very much a story, and then he'll bring the guitar and do short thought jokes.
Yep.
And it's like, that's a really interesting way of doing it, where you can kind of have multiple styles.
Yeah, he's definitely evolved, and because he, you know, we probably had more similar styles when he was just doing the guitar thing and, you know, doing jokes and, you know, puns and things like that. But now he's sort of like really doing like a lot of stories, and so that's kind of cool to see that's a possible evolution too. Like,
yeah.
I don't necessarily, like I'll have a long joke, but it's just like sort of a distraction from what the punchline is going to be. So like sometimes I'll, you know, like I have this joke about, baby carrots. Cause I had always wanted to do a joke about baby carrots for some reason. And initially my thoughts on baby carrots were that they were like, they look like cheese puffs, but I'm always disappointed that they're not cheese puffs, you know, cause it's just like, whatever. They're
fucking
like,
got me again.
Yeah. But that thing never worked. And then for some reason, you know, I ended up doing some, you know, made some abortion joke or something like this, and I was able to connect these pieces, and so the joke kind of starts out with me talking about the election when Obama and Mitt Romney, and talking about the hypocrisy of Mitt Romney being a Republican, but he was the governor of Massachusetts, and so he pitched more left-wing, you know, and to kind of appeal to the Democrats, and so he kind of had a more pro-choice stance when he was governor and running for governor of Massachusetts. But now when he's running for president, he has this pro-life stance because he's going for the Republicans. And sort of the hypocrisy, then it came out that Mitt Romney actually invested in a medical waste disposal company, which medical waste disposal, one of the things that includes is aborted fetuses. And that got me thinking, like, isn't there something like more green that we could do with fetuses instead of just medical waste? Like, why can't we, like, you know, turn them into compost or something? You know? That way, when you have like people over for dinner, you could say, "Oh, do you like those carrots? Those are baby carrots."
Yeah.
It's like that whole thing to like just end up with like to say baby carrots and have it be a punchline is like, you know, but I'd never like sat down and like really figured it out. It was just, you know, that sort of thought happened, you know, baby compost, baby carrots.
I've been noticing, I don't know, like I'll have a premise or something that kind of sticks out to me that I think is silly or weird, and it's like I can't figure out the funny part of it yet, Norma. And like, I'll write it down, obviously, but then like week later, like another thing that's silly pops up. And I go, oh, that can now make sense with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've doing my best to keep everything written down and organize it to whatever possible. Like it's in a stack. It's not really like organized by genre, but it's like, what was the longest you kept an idea of something you thought was funny, but you couldn't figure out until you actually got it to a joke?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. There's probably still some idea, I think. And I think that's the important thing, like, in dealing with your ideas. And what I learned was, like, you know, first rule is sort of write everything down. And then if you have an idea that you think is funny or worth it, to always kind of keep, I think a lot of people, you know, I tried that idea joke, I'm not going to do that joke anymore. Like having those sort of boundaries of like, I tried it enough times, but really some jokes that I have, it took me a long time to incorporate them, or I'll finally be able to say that thing that I had thought, but I just know where to say it now.
Within the set.
Yeah. Within the set. So a lot of times it's just that is like, oh, you can't really say this thing until you've built a rapport with people. Or if you've already gotten people giggling, you can say this thing and they'll keep giggling. Whereas, you know, when you're trying it in the context of like a 5-minute set, you're bringing something out that maybe, you know, doesn't make sense in that short context. And so like some things you can really only discover when you're doing a longer set and like, okay, this is how these things fit in. And, you know, just the whole art, having an arsenal of ideas that you can pull from, I think is the most important, and, you know, not crossing anything off. I mean, there's definitely jokes that I've figured out are funny and how to make them funny, but that I don't do because I did them so much that they just don't excite me anymore. But like, so to me, the idea of like having the thing that you want to make funny and figuring it out, no matter how long it takes. Because if you're going to keep doing comedy, you know, you're going to have to come up with another idea, you know,
like,
to replace it, even if you don't use it. So you might as well just, like, you know, keep this stuff in your cupboard.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, like, you know, you try to make chili one time and then it didn't taste good, so then all the chili that you bought or all the beans that you bought, you throw away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you keep the beans in your cupboard because you'll, you know, maybe come across a fucking spice that'll
make
your chili right.
Yeah, and they make you fart, too. And farts are funny.
Farts are funny. Yeah. Farts are never not funny.
The cornerstone of good comedy.
It really is
noises out of your asshole.
I blew a couple earlier, and they're good ones.
That's why I lit the candle. This guy came early.
Yeah, I always come early, but not with the fire and ice condoms.
Yeah, I can't believe you got those.
God damn it.
It seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Do you think the guys at Trojan were like, icy hot?
Yeah.
Condoms. Let's get this going, guys. Yeah. What are we waiting so long for?
Mm-hmm.
Stand by it. That's good.
Did you taste it?
After, yeah.
After, yeah. Oh, like went down there. It was like,
oh, you put your dick in your mouth.
Yeah,
that's good.
So I cleaned it with mouth to reuse it.
Good. Okay. Oh, there we go. We got some.
Which is what you should do.
You just, did you like lick it or just put the whole condom in your mouth and kind of swished it around?
Yeah.
That's good.
I'm hearing what I'm saying too.
No, it's I'm so sorry, guys.
What was that? Coneheads where they thought condoms were bubblegum.
Oh,
yeah.
He offers it to Sinbad, and he goes, "Nah, I'm cool."
Yeah.
You ever show with Sinbad?
I've never done a show with Sinbad.
He's funny. Have you watched his stand-up?
I like yeah. Sinbad. I like Sinbad. You know, back in the day, I never got to do a show with him, but I got to do. You know, I did do like some Dave Chappelle shows. I did. The only time I've ever performed at the Comedy Cellar was to warm up for my Late Night with Seth Meyers set.
Mm-hmm.
Nick was doing his like Tonight Show the same night, so he got me a guest set on the show, and Damon Wayans went on right before Nick.
Whoa.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I went on like right after Nick, so it was like, you know, gotta be on a show with Damon Wayans, who was one of, you know,
yeah,
one of my favorites.
I'm gonna get you sucker. He was in that, right? Or was that was his brother, right?
It was Keenan.
Yeah,
that was in it, but he might have been in it. I don't remember. I don't know if everybody was in it, but that was one of the, I think that was one of his best movies.
Yeah,
was you know, one. It was like
Blank Man.
Fun. Yeah, he was. In, yeah, he
Blank
was
Man. Blank yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
He was a superhero and he was weird.
I've never. Yeah.
He would jizz his pants. I watched the movie when I was like really young, and he like would be like, when if a girl touched him, be like, ah, and like fall on the floor. And like, I don't understand why that's funny or what he's doing there. And like, oh, he came in his pants. Uh-huh. I get it. Sorry, Henry.
Yeah, he had this joke about like, this girl was like telling me to talk dirty, like during sex, and then he's like, he's just basically, I'm coming. It's like that's the dirty talk. It's just like him saying he's coming is like so funny.
That's great. How was tour? You just finished, right?
Stomach growl.
Oh, okay. I'm like, leather vest is the answer.
Yeah. You answer this one. Quato.
Yeah. Open your mind.
That vest only speaks
Spanish. Yeah, the tour was great. It was like super quick. I mean, it was like 14 days, maybe 16 shows or 15 shows because our last show got canceled.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Because of the snow, right?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, they had some ice, snow, blizzard thing happening in Nashville that they never have, and they don't have the capacity to deal with even a little bit. So the whole town shuts down.
Jeez.
But the whole tour was great. It was, you know, six of us in an RV. Scott was there. We're making shooting this documentary. We had another cinematographer, production person, and three comedians, and it was really fun.
Yeah,
it was fun just because I'd never done anything like that before. Like, I'm leaving on the road again on the 4th for about the same amount of time, but this one's just me by myself.
Yeah.
And more random patchwork things, like a college here, a bar show there, things like that. So, yeah, it's, but this was like a nice, you know, always doing it and getting enough, you know, good stage time. Like I wasn't headlining it, so I was like still doing like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So getting a good amount of time, but not being like exhausted after the thing, mm-hmm. you know, or feeling like, oh, I just said all my jokes. What do I have to say all of my jokes again, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just doing the half hour allows me to, you know, have a little bit more leeway with like variety.
Yeah.
That was nice.
That's cool. Yeah, I got to see it when you guys came over to the Bell House.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed, what was the group that did the sketch? I can't remember what they're called.
Oh, Good Neighbor.
Good Neighbor, yeah.
Yeah, they're
great. That's really funny.
Yeah, they're the SNL guys now. Like, they, one of the guys is a writer, Nick, and the other two are on the show, mm-hmm. kind of like newer guys on the show, but they're, I think, the best part of the show. And they do a lot of the digital shorts now that are really hilarious.
Yeah, that whole digital shorts thing has always been, like, since they started, it's been one of my favorite parts of SNL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't really funny.
I always thought about, like, digital shorts, or, like, what Neo wears in The Matrix when he goes to sleep at night.
Oh, okay.
Digital shorts.
Yeah. Digital shorts. Dumb.
No, that's a good extension of that.
No,
I think I think they're good, though. I think those things, I like those better than the Saturday Night Live skits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just me.
Well, the sketches always have, I think, like, the same vibe. They can't really vary their vibe and energy because it's always, like, that same
room, yeah,
standard thing. And so I think the tone is always similar. You'll get, like, I think it's really just when you have that guest host or whatever performer is on there that kind of helps make it, you know, the thing better. Mm. Kenan Thompson, never. Hey Keenan, if you're listening, I'm a big fan.
He's so happy now.
Yeah. Good Burger was awesome.
No, Good Burger was great. Yeah. Like, that's
underrated film.
Yeah, it really is. I can't believe they didn't get any Oscar nods for that.
This year?
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, they're like, I don't know, we missed this one, guys.
Yeah, Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Everybody who is in Good Burger.
Abe Bagoda, he was in it. Right? Abe Bagoda, yeah.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, and he's been—he's all old.
Yeah,
he's doing his old thing in that one.
Yeah, doing that old thing with an A in the middle. Thing.
Yeah. Like I said, I just start. I'm starting comedy. You saw like my fourth time on set, which was kind of nerve wracking. But
yeah,
the way I've been thinking about how to get good at this is kind of the way I think about how I got good at fighting. Whereas I constantly try and work small ideas a lot and then kind of move on.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I'll work a lot of my takedown defense, like, one week, and it's just really specific on that, and uh-huh. I feel like I get a good idea of that. And with joke writing, I've been trying to do, I'll write longer jokes, and I'll try and do how many, like, shorter jokes I can do. Is that dumb?
Is that dumb?
Is that a dumb way of doing it?
Well, do you have any jokes? Do you have any, like, MMA or
I have a few fight jokes. It's just hard because I think a lot of being funny is being vulnerable, and I'm basically saying I could beat everyone up.
Uh-huh.
Which is a hard angle. So I've been trying to do the angle where I used to fight, and I don't fight anymore because it hurts my head, and I'm losing brain cells, and how most jobs you get rewarded for your time with money. But this, you get rewarded for less childhood memories.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, kind of that angle and, like, how it changes my everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if someone sneaks up behind me, like, it's kind of, like, I get all alerted.
Uh-huh.
Things like that. But it's definitely been actually the hardest part of my life to joke about. Because I think people will get, will kind of build, like, a disassociation because not many people know what cage fighting is like.
Uh-huh.
So when they see me talking about it, they might feel like...
But I think it's one of those things that's, like, very interesting and very popular and, like, you know, one of my best friends, he's like, super into it. He doesn't do it, but, you know, he's just, like, into it. And I think, you know, in thinking about your approach to comedy, it's, like, how to, you know, one, it's sort of, like, going with what you know or constantly thinking about.
Yeah.
Because that thing that you've been constantly thinking about, you have the ability to really mine it and hit it from angles that other people aren't expressly openly thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, to me that's an interesting idea of somebody that's, you know, it's as funny as a guy, as a comedian deciding to do MMA, an MMA guy or you know, cage fighter becoming a comedian, and you know that sort of like, I mean, marketability and opportunities that would present, you know, I think are kind of endless. You know, like I mean, what if you did your, you know, if you had an act that had to do with all this stuff. Then you have this whole thing of like people that do this stuff wanting, hey, come do fucking the UFC Christmas party.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
very
what I'm saying?
Yeah, like I was thinking
like,
about
I
like
mean, that's a that would be a cool fucking thing to do, and cool. like you know, kind of roasting these guys or you know, roasting the whole scenario of it because I'm sure there's you know everything needs its tension cut.
Totally.
You know? Yeah. But I think that's a good idea to do, you know, work on little ideas. But I think the. What New York allows is this sort of like you can increase your work density of trying the things, so you can get up multiple open mics or multiple you know shows, and you have all these opportunities to you know try this one thing over and over again. You tried it three times tonight, or two times, or however many times this week, and then it allows you to be like, oh, have an understanding of it. So I think just it's just increasing the frequency.
Yeah,
you know. The frequency of you know and just not stopping it's like it's that thing of like you know you if you're fighting somebody I imagine you don't let the thing get in your mind like the one thing that you're not gonna do is tap out right or like at the very last thing that you're not gonna do is tap out or you know you want to make them tap out but your goal is never to be like, well, if this move doesn't work, I might just submit
and tap out.
You know what I'm
saying?
but people do that in comedy all the time, and they give themselves these limitations of, well, if I try this joke once or twice or whatever, it doesn't go, well, fuck it. You know?
Yeah, I think from the advice I've gotten from like different podcasts and just listening to comedians talk and like. At the stage I'm at, the tadpole stage I'm at, where it's, for me, I think, just more concerned with being relaxed on stage and not so worried about my jokes not being that constructed well, because I just don't, I have no idea. But it's weird that I think that I had to cage fight before I was courageous enough to do stand-up comedy. It's and so I think that's what I have a kind of a little boost is that I'm okay on stage, like emotionally, like I'm not worried or scared. And just like, I think, now trying to use that to help me actually be funny has been interesting.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, okay, yeah, you guys, if you don't laugh, okay, I'm bummed. I want you guys to laugh, but I could beat you guys all up. So like, I kind of win in that way.
That'd be a funny way to end your set.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need you to laugh.
I could beat you guys. I could line you guys up.
I'm actually, I did some jokes at an open mic around the corner. I talked about how my day job is wearing board shorts and beating up my friends. Like I teach, that's what I do every day. And another comedian went on stage and talked about how one of the guys he works with, like, is a really like an asshole that does karate, and he like challenges it to a fight. And I kind of heckled him, like, "I'll teach you how to fight." And then like six people like kind of turned around, like, "Can I come?"
Oh, wow.
So I'm gonna do like an open mat for comedians only. teach them all how to fight.
That'd be awesome.
Well, that would be, I think that would be, you know, not to be a fucking producer douchebag about things, but that would be a cool, I think that would just be a cool web series or something that you could do that would both, you know, incorporate your life and, you know, get yourself out there. Because there's lots of different ways to be out there with comedy, and stand-up is one of them, and it's sort of like the purest sort of, especially in New York, the sort of thing you want to do stand-up, you know? But once you're in stand up and you find yourself, well, I've, you know, like I don't have a podcast, but I need it, you know, like, it's like this thing of like, I should have a podcast or I need to be doing something else. But these things, you know, like having your own show, producing your own show or open mic or whatever will, not only give you that stage time, but people that you have on, they'll,
it's a really bad apartment. This is
that horse is galloping?
Yeah.
This place is falling apart. Sorry.
I hope you're not paying too much for it.
We are.
Okay, yeah. He could beat up the rats.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, But doing, I think doing something like that would, you know, doing some sort of web series where you, you know, even interview the people, you talk with them about that, and comedians doing this stuff, you know, way to get yourself out there. And also that would increase your opportunities within the comedy world, which is what you want. You
yeah,
know, regardless of the ideas that you have to say, the politics, the reality of it is, yeah, like stage time, like getting up on stage. And there's, you know, throughout, like I'm, you know, however many years, like 12 or whatever years into doing comedy, you know, there's still some shows that are hard for me to get, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even though I've gotten, you know, had these milestones and been on Comedy Central and late night shows, it's still, I mean, it's a lot easier, you know,
sure,
I
sure.
definitely sometimes even get preferential treatment in certain circumstances, but it's never not a hustle. It's never there. You will always have obstacles. And I think without, you know, without obstacles, you won't be the proper protagonist in your own story.
Yeah.
You know, so you always need to be confronted with obstacles. You always need to have that boulder chasing you, or that fucking thing to you know, swing across. And,
is
you
that
know,
the beginning of Indiana Jones, you just described?
Yeah, just an Indiana Jones analogy.
You have that tiny little Thai boy yelling at you.
Yeah. But it's that thing of like, you know, we let these obstacles in our lives really sometimes, you know, defeat us or knock us down, but it's that thing of, you know, what would Superman be without his obstacles? You know, Superman, the powers of Superman really don't matter and aren't really utilized properly without Lex Luthor being there, without his kryptonite weakness, without falling in love with, you know, a human and fearing losing her, you know? So it's like, I think keeping those things in your life that, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But also knowing that you need to constantly be removing those things and getting, you know, I think this, you know, like opening up your apartment and inviting a comedian over to do a thing. I mean, that's like a proper move of like forward progress. That's you know, invaluable. That, you know, I mean, however many years ago this wouldn't, you know, this wasn't happening.
Yeah, not
you
at
know,
all.
Like.
Yeah.
It's like, and comedians always want to talk about themselves.
Yeah,
know? So it's like, hey, you want to come over and talk about yourself? Well, let me check my schedule.
At noon.
Yes.
Finally.
But I don't know. I think that would be cool to, I mean, film that or find somebody to film that, because that's really interesting. And,
yeah.
And then, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking about how we could use that to, because like I've been doing the podcast for a long time and then, I teach and all that stuff. And so we have a bunch of little outlets with the website and stuff that's like people can, even if they don't haven't been watching or paying attention this whole time, they stumble across us or me. They could see that I have this backlog of work I've been doing. And it's like, okay, there's something to it. You know, he's been doing something, hope at least. So I was thinking about
you could even talk some like MMA guys into doing comedy. You know, it's like you talk comedians do it, and you know, and sort of like that's the role reversal. It's
yeah,
like
comedians had you guys have to fight. We have to watch you guys fight, and then we'll do stand up.
Uh-huh.
It's funny because I remember like right before I started, I was like, okay, I have to do stand up before the end of 2014, and it was like December 19th, and I was like, I promised myself I'll at least try once. And I was training in New Jersey with like a bunch of the pro guys, and like they're asking what was up in my life, and like, I'm gonna do stand up this week for the first time, and like, oh, that's crazy. And like, you guys beat the shit out of each other. Like, we knock the fuck out of each other in cages half naked.
Uh-huh.
But you think telling jokes is crazy.
Yeah.
And comedians think what I do is, you know, it's just like, am I really crazy?
But you're like Blade.
Yeah.
You're the daywalker.
I'm the daywalker. I'll be the bridge for those two things.
Yeah. Lots of sunscreen. Well, no, you don't need sunscreen. That's right.
I need sunscreen. I actually need that weird Chris Christopherson serum.
Yeah.
The serum.
Yeah.
That was a good movie. They shouldn't have made three more of them.
Yeah, Blade One was awesome. Just the way that it opened. And
yeah.
Steven Dorff, all handsome.
Yeah.
I never saw him.
When he was like most jacked in that one, and then he got less jacked. You know, Blade got less jacked over time.
Yeah.
You know, in bankruptcy and all that stuff.
Oh, the prison, the whole prison thing.
Yeah.
It was funny because he was in a movie with Ving Rhames where he was a boxer in prison, and then he went to prison. I was hoping that someone was going to challenge him.
Did you guys see that, speaking of superheroes and whatnot, did you guys see that new Power Rangers thing that
I
came
did.
Out? Not too bad.
Not
too
bad.
Not too shabby, guys.
They made like a R-rated fan film of Power Rangers.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty interesting. James Vanderbeek was in it, which yeah. I'm like, is that fucking James Vanderbeek?
Yeah, and huh. Katie Sackhoff, Starbuck from the new Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was like all dirty and gritty.
You saw it?
Yeah, it was on the internet.
Oh. Yeah.
It's like 15 minutes long.
Were you going to ask, what is it called?
What's the internet?
What's the internet?
How do you feel about Dave Chappelle being all jacked now?
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's fine.
I have a theory about that.
What do you got?
Actually, because I noticed Dave and who was the other person who got all fit?
Dr. Dre.
No, comedian.
Oh.
Look, there's another comedian who got all fit. Oh, Carrot Top.
Oh, yeah.
Also got Dre. Here's my thing.
Oh, and before him.
Not always. What are you talking about?
Before him was.
For years. Yeah, sure.
But
what was
yeah.
his name?
But he wasn't.
He wasn't. He was a skinny comedian. Yeah. You have another one?
Yeah, the dude like from the 80s.
Oh, that was on SNL, Italian guy.
Yeah.
What
was that guy's name?
It'll hit me in a minute. Yeah. He wasn't very funny. But
Joe Piscopo,
that's what it is.
He got jacked.
Yeah, he got all big. He was doing steroids.
Yeah.
My theory is these two people are very, very famous for being funny. And in their daily life when they're walking around, especially Dave Chappelle, he talks about how people just yell at him in the street and bother him when he's with his family. And I know that from someone who wasn't physically strong, I mean, barely now, but it feels very invasive and you feel like you could be a victim at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think working out and at least building your body to be physically strong is a way to comfort that feeling of, okay, well, if something happens, these weirdos yelling, I'm rich, bitch,
yeah.
at least I have something to fall back on. At least now I'm secure in that way.
Uh-huh.
Because I can only imagine how fucking much he gets yelled at every day in the street. He can't walk around.
Well, he doesn't even look as much like himself.
No, he doesn't.
Like,
yeah.
So, like, whenever I see pictures of him on the internet, I'm like, oh, that doesn't seem like Dave Chappelle because he was this tall, skinny.
Yeah. And also, we've been seeing, I think, there isn't that much of him the last 8 years. Yeah. And before that was just Chappelle's show. So, that's all we remember him by was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
8 years ago? How long ago was that show?
Yeah.
10 years ago? That's insane.
Crazy, right?
So, yeah, we see that version of him, and now it's just like, you grew up, you're older, you're just a man.
Uh-huh.
It's weird. I saw him on, like, a Letterman or something, and it's like, oh, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look like yourself to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing to say.
Yeah, it's interesting. Joe Rogan's really into it. I mean, Joe Rogan's
kind of a
bit jacked, and
he's been big
always
forever.
Kind of been...
He kind of, we had the same kind of path where he was a fighter first. He was, like, a taekwondo Massachusetts champion, mm-hmm. and then started doing comedy. Very interesting person to me. Very interesting.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not a huge fan of his stand-up. His style of stand-up is not really my favorite.
Yeah.
I think he's funny in the show, and I think I am interested in how he talks, but it's like, it's just a weird, he has a weird angle in the world.
Uh-huh.
He's this fighter guy who does psychedelics and does comedy. It's just very interesting.
Yeah, he's a really weird combo.
Yeah. I loved news radio as a kid. And I remember I had a bonsai plant, and for some reason I named it Joe Rogan. And I remember I'm like, what's the opposite of a bonsai? Oh, yeah, Joe Rogan. Because I didn't know about his, like, actually being introspective and being interesting before. I just saw him as the fear factor guy.
Yeah.
Mm. That's definitely an interesting person.
Yeah, it was crazy when I saw that. Because I never watched news radio, and I just knew him from Fear Factor. And then a buddy of mine showed me. He was like, dude, have you seen Joe Rogan talking about DMT? I was like, the Fear Factor guy? And then I listened to it, and I was like, what in the world? And then started listening to his podcast and stuff. And I was like, man, what a interesting little human they put together.
Mm-hmm.
These Capri Suns are delicious. I'm so glad I bought them.
Yeah, it's weird. I haven't had like an artificial juice like this in so long. It's so crazy. No wonder kids are fucking addicted to this shit.
Yeah.
On the couch and stuff, man.
It's funny that they call this juice. I just realized they call it juice.
Yeah, like they call this juice and they call Apple Jacks breakfast.
Here you go. Here's your sugar. Yeah, this is just uncarbonated soda.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's... It's syrup with like a little bit of water inside.
There's not even a nutritional facts thing on this.
they're probably just like, what about the nutritional?
Zero. You get zero.
Yeah, it's a blank page.
It's negative. It takes away. It leaches the vitamins from your bones.
Yeah.
It expels it through your piss. So what's this next tour you're doing? Some dates?
It's, what am I? It's just so random. It's just so funny.
Are you traveling by hot air balloon and wherever you land, it's just like, all right, comedy.
Yeah, pretty much. I go to...
You okay? I almost got a spit take with you. Holy shit. That would have been an honor.
on all the computer gear.
Yeah. Well, that's all his. You can...
Like, I go to Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
Do a thing there. I go to Kansas City, do a couple shows at this improv place, but it's more of like an improv theater. It's not like the Improv or Improv
Kansas
chain.
City. Kansas or Kansas City, Missouri?
I don't even know.
Is there a place
I think they're pretty close.
Oh, they're really
so hopefully.
Makes it even better.
Hopefully, like, if I can.
Paramedics are like, which Kansas City?
And then I go to St. Louis, and then I go to Denver. And in St. Louis, I'm doing a couple shows. I'm doing like a college and a some Elvis room show, some show that's like has an Elvis theme to it. And then
perfect.
And then in Denver, I'm doing like a
the pedophile rap would go really well in the Elvis room.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see. We'll see. I just did. I did it in New Mexico at this in Albuquerque at this it was a theater festival, but then they had this like free speech comedy hour. But uh-huh. I think like when I did the thing, you know, like it, you know, sometimes I can do that thing and everybody's like really pumped up about it and like, oh, that was so cool. But then some audiences I'll do it in front of, or depending on what the mix of the audience is, you know, just get like a smile, okay, just you. Like a thing, and
thanks for ruining my day.
Instead of those things of like, you know, you never know what the life experience of your audience is, but that's also the part like that tension needs to be sort of addressed and cut sometimes. And it's like, you know, should only people in wheelchairs be allowed to talk about people in wheelchairs? Should only blind people be able to talk about blind people? Should only men be able to talk about men?
Or yeah, yeah.
Vice versa. And so there's lots of breaches that can happen, and, you know, not having certain life experiences and talking about them can make people. So sometimes you either have to, like, as a comedian, you have to own it as it happened to you, you know, like this fucked up thing happened to you, and this is why you're talking about it, or you have to project it onto like a friend, like, hey, I have this buddy that always says fucked up shit. The other day he said this fucked up shit. Because you want to say this thing that's really fucked up, but it's easier to have your buddy say it and you're just the reporter.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So there's that mode of sort of dissociation that happens.
Yeah, it's like Otto and George. Like, people would get mad at the puppet.
Yeah.
The puppet got stabbed. Someone stabbed the puppet once because the person got mad at what the puppet said. It's like the best compliment for a ventriloquist.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's so funny. Yeah, I mean, it's weird we're getting so progressive, we're becoming conservative in those terms. And it's like, the way I think of it with people getting in trouble, for especially comedians, for what they say, and it's like you can't look at it on paper. It's more about intent. And also, I feel like if you walk into a comedy club and you sit down, you're kind of signing a contract that's saying, I understand that this is not a senator making statements, as a comedian telling jokes. And it's just like, it's almost like now I find myself and even other open micers, before they tell a joke, they're already apologizing for the joke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm not this and this, but blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, why are you even saying that? Just say, if you believe in it, just say it. And it's funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, man, where people, like people that are like part of groups or whatever that might get made fun of, or, you know, or have this thing brought up. Like, it's sad, but I think that a lot of them, they find comfort in their ability to say, look how hard I have it, you know? And if you joke about that, which you should, because I think that's a better way of making people aware of things rather than being like, you don't know how bad I have it. Like, just tell people, make a joke about it.
Yeah.
I don't think people want to let that go.
Yeah.
Or not everyone, but there's some people that don't want to let go of that. You know, they feel like it's like, you know, certain groups feel like they have this thing, you know, they're like, you know, I might be...
Say a specific group.
Gay people.
You knew it.
But
why'd you look at Danny when you said that?
He knows why.
No, why did you look at Danny's dick when you said that?
But they're, I mean...
Why is Danny's dick out?
Yeah, it's like there's certain minority groups that are just like, you know, they don't want it to be out in the open, because I feel like there's like this, like maybe even from like a political standpoint, they have like I feel like it's like a platform that people feel like they have, and they don't want to let go. They don't want the growth to happen.
It's frustrating. I have a joke that I think is the best joke I've written that just isn't saying much, but it's about homosexuality, but it's not making fun of homosexuals. It's just the idea of putting things in your butt.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten zero response. Like, not even like a little bit of groans, but like, I'm like, what did I ever say? That's like,
What's the joke?
The joke is, I was reading that they're getting really close to curing HIV. But I'm a little skeptical about the medicine working because it's not available as a suppository. So that, in my head, that makes so much sense to me, and I think it's hilarious. I've been getting no response, and I'm like, is it that it's mean, or they don't understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's always hard to say with ideas. Doggy's getting cozy.
Yeah, he's like, I'm fucking shit.
I'm making a fort.
He does all the time.
You know, I don't know. I think that's the thing. It's like if you have something that you want to say or these two ideas, it's knowing, you know, what part of the idea do you really like or are identifying with, and what, you know, also sometimes you're like, I have this joke that I want to make and I have all the ingredients here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you keep trying to force the ingredients together, which is sometimes, you know, to make it palatable, you just have to remove one of the ingredients or add a third ingredient. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so I think there can be a lot of toiling with the same idea when you're the toiling happens when you're not adding or removing ingredients, when you're just, all right, I'm going to put the flour in before the milk. Now I'm going to put the milk in before the flour.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, it was all about the eggs that you're supposed to add. Mm-hmm. So it's like just thinking in those terms of, you know, what could, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes disassociating it is the only way to perhaps make something palatable. But, mm-hmm. Like I have a joke that sometimes is like, I mean, it's an older joke that I hardly do, but it was one of those sort of taboo jokes that kind of deals with a couple of things. Because I say, you know, faggot is like the N-word to faggots, but I can say faggot because they're not as scary as black people. And so it's this interesting thing.
God damn it.
It's this interesting thing of like,
hold on a second.
saying, you know, like, how do you say faggot? Well, it's like almost like repeating it multiple times kind of abstracts it a little bit, as opposed to just saying faggot once. Mm-hmm. Right. So once it's repeated three times, and then also bringing in the sort of thing of the comparison of like, oh, maybe faggot is like the N-word, but like I'm saying faggot, but I'm not saying the N-word.
Uh-huh.
But then, you know, they're not as scary as black people kind of brings it back to like, oh, wait, what side is it on? It's not necessarily, this joke isn't about gay people. Or, it's really just about these words that are taboo that you can't say or things like that. And Nick Thune has actually a joke where he says faggot a lot in this joke, the story joke. I don't know if you remember it from,
maybe.
It's a story from when he went to Denver and he,
basically
these guys are tripping him, and because he's wearing tight pants, they're calling him faggot and hey faggot. And so he repeats it, but it's like within the story. Right. And it's these guys saying, and it's not him saying the word faggot. So it's an interesting.
Danny's crying right now. Cause you've said faggot so many times.
I've been called a faggot. South one.
Have you?
Awesome.
This is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Right?
The guys in a pickup truck drove by me and they called me a faggot because I was wearing like tight pants too.
Because your finger was in your butt, walking around.
I was holding my friend's hand too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Did you ever do like, it's the difficult thing is understanding for comedy writing is the equation. And like with everything else I've done, there's been a coach, you know, everything I've done, there's been someone there that's showing me how they become good. Mm-hmm. In comedy, you just see people being good and you try to break it down yourself. Do you ever have like a comedy partner or like how do people get good at other than just doing it a lot? There has to be a faster way.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's all the ways that you engage in it. And the more ways that you engage in it, the better sense of the whole thing you'll have. But I think it's really just, you know, kind of like that Malcolm Gladwell sort of thing about 10,000 hours, or you just have to sort of put in the time, and like being in New York allows you to put in more time faster. You increase your frequency and intensity, and that's like, you know, kind of probably similar to the training like, right, you know. So I really think it's just that. I mean, there's plenty of classes you can take. There's, you know, I wish I would have gotten into improv, you know, yeah. In hindsight, I wish I would have maybe engaged in more of that, because there's a lot more training and a lot more partnership and mm-hmm. teamwork and things like that. And I think you can really gain a lot from, like, you know, about writing and about scenes and doing things and acting and performing and auditioning, which are all these things that happen when you're a comedian. But when you're just doing stand up, you're just like, all right, jokes, stage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very like more of like a Mason's approach to building it than you know, whatever else, other part of the
like
analogy.
An architect.
That yeah.
It's just hitting it from a different angle that will make it better, which is exactly how I've been
fighting. I mean, this right here, and I mean, conversations mm-hmm. and, you know, things that keep you excited about doing it too, right? Like, you want to just, you know.
Absolutely.
Because there's going to be Tony Robbins, one of my favorite motivational speakers, but he has this quote that's basically like, the key to success is being able to deal with massive amounts of rejection.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the things that happen that are good and the trophies that you get. Those aren't the keys to success. The keys are like, you know, healing from the fucking thing that could have taken you out of the thing.
Or, yeah, yeah.
You know, getting back up on the horse.
Makes a lot of sense.
You know, and it's just like having to do.
Well, just, Bob there.
Just doing that, you know. And you know, and just be willing to do it. And also, sometimes if you're too, you know, the eagerness can backfire in that, like, you know, it can set up expectations and things that become even a bigger hindrances than just more normal obstacles. But, like, I don't know, just don't stop. That's the only thing.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Don't stop.
Well, I mean, it's again, I'm not doing it with an idea of like getting a pilot or, you know, like becoming an actor or anything. I just want to, mm-hmm. I really enjoy it and I want to be good at it.
Yeah.
So
I think keeping it simple like that is quite nice.
Yeah, I think so too. Ben, thank you so much for coming by.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Where can people like kind of like keep up to date with what you're doing and tour dates?
I mean, Twitter. My Twitter.
Mm-hmm. That's at Ben
my
Stiller.
Facebook. Yeah.
You took Ben Stiller. Stiller.
Yeah. At Red Hour Ben. or Facebook. I mean, you can, like, Facebook and Twitter, basically where I post stuff.
Cool. We'll link it all to the
link
episode.
It all. Link that shit.
Yeah, you got it. Cool, man.
Word.
Thank you so much. Seriously, it meant a lot to me.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. WalkingAloneNYC.com. Buy something from the ad banner. And then it helps us. Or, actually, no, fuck. We have our patches. The gi patch. You know, there are gi patches, but you can put them on whatever.
A couch.
You can put it on your couch and make sure no one gets upset.
If you're in
denim jackets.
Denim jackets?
Yeah, battle
jacket. That's actually a good idea.
Yeah. That's a battle jacket.
Like, I didn't know what that meant.
Oh, it's like the metal, the vest that metal dudes wear.
Oh, those cool punk rock jackets?
Yeah.
Don't put it on. I don't want to see my patches on that.
Oh, dude. So good.
But if you guys order one, walkingalonemsc@gmail.com, and I'll do a little drawing of me submitting you. Boom. Bye.